Hey guys, thanks for tuning in. In this episode, I've got my friend Winston Hong. He's a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu brown belt, and he trains out of Garage Jiu-Jitsu out of Bondi Junction, which is one of the most renowned Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu gyms in Australia, producing some very top-level athletes and grapplers. So we sit down and I talk to him about a few things in regards to how he got started in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, as well as his views on it as a self-defense art, and we drew some parallels and some similarities between coaching in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and how it compares to coaching in other sports, namely strength sports such as powerlifting and whatnot, as well as other similarities between the way successful athletes in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu think and the way successful athletes in, again, other sports such as powerlifting also think. So it was a pretty interesting conversation. We delved into some of his favorite moves and techniques, and it was just a good general overall conversation. Check it out. As always, please rate the podcast if you like the episode. If you have any suggestions, send them through. And thank you for tuning in. Enjoy. Winston, what's going on, brother? Thanks for joining me.
Yeah, good to be here, man.
For people out there who don't know, the way this is actually the first like conversation we are having, like a voice conversation. So the way I know Winston is, a while back I put up a post on Instagram, I think it was, yeah, where I was calling out for a couple of fighters, a handful of fighters who wanted to come forward and get some trial testing with me, because I just finished up a program, and I wanted to put it to the test with some, you know, real life killers. And so Winston came forward, and he had a comp actually coming up, a BJJ comp at that time. And I had the privilege of getting to know him through there. And lo and behold, he is actually a bit of a weapon himself. He's a coach, which I want to actually get him to get into that personally. And yeah, it's a small world, because I actually know of, I think a lot of people know of where you coach and the gym that you coach out of, Garage Jiu-Jitsu out at Bondi Junction, with Guy and the rest of the crew over there. So speaking of which, why don't you run me and everybody else through your story? Where'd you grow up? How did you get into BJJ, and what kept you there, and what have been your achievements through that time?
Yeah, so just to start, I'm born and raised in Singapore. So I came to Australia in 2011, so about 9 years ago. So actually, I came to study university, you know, like a lot of other, you know, students. Came to study university, and then it's a funny story because I didn't know anyone. So I went into a share house because, you know, I wanted to make some friends, you know, get to know some of the locals. And then one of my housemates was actually a BJJ purple belt. And then, you know, one day he was bored, and then he was like, man, he asked like a few of us, there was like six of us who stay in the house. So he asked us like, do you guys want to do jiu-jitsu? I can teach you. So we're like, you know what? Let's do it. So we bought some mats, put it up in the living room, and that's how I started jiu-jitsu. So I was training with my friend for about 6 to 8 months, and then somewhere along the way, he got a girlfriend, and then he started getting really serious with his girlfriend. And then, so he decided to move in with her. And then because he left, he took all the mats with him. I was like, man, I'm really starting to get into this. So, I was like, I just got to find a place to train. And then because I was staying around Bondi Junction at the time. And then I just like, all right, I'm just going to go like gym shopping, you know, like, you know, just try different gyms, try a few different gyms. And then, see which one I like. So I tried two different gyms before Garage Jiu-Jitsu, and then they were okay, but like not really my vibe. And then I joined Garage Jiu-Jitsu. I was like, man, this is the place, you know, because they had good vibe, you know, good training environment. And pretty much because I was a beginner, you know, I just got like demolished, you know. I just haven't had the feeling of really like, you know, getting pressure and getting demolished. Yeah. So that's how I started. Yeah, and then I just kept going from there, and eventually I got to where.
So how long ago was it that you joined over there? So how long have you been at
How long were you in the garage for?
Yeah, so I started in 2013 in about June. So I started jiu-jitsu about 2012 in August. And then I trained with my friend on and off for like about 8 months or so, 8 to 10 months. And then I joined garage jiu-jitsu in 2013 in about June. Yeah.
So you've pretty much been at the one gym this whole time since you started jiu-jitsu?
Yeah, in Australia pretty much. Yeah, in Australia. So like pretty much just one gym from day one to now. Yeah.
That's amazing, man. So did you have any other martial arts backgrounds before that? Like, because, you know, you got into jiu-jitsu. It's, I mean, back then, I guess it was fairly popular. And even now it's very, very popular. But did you do anything beforehand?
Not really, actually. It was pretty much my first martial arts. So before, like, I did a little bit of boxing. I did a bit of Muay Thai, but it was like just for fun. You know, I did like on and off like 6 months of boxing, and then like I did like about 8 months of Muay Thai, but it didn't really stick. Like I enjoyed it. I enjoyed like the physical aspect of it. But like I think what really attracted me to jiu-jitsu was like there was a very strong like, you know, technical and like mental aspect to it. There's a lot of like, you know, problem solving. Like, it's not to say that there isn't any problem solving in like boxing or Muay Thai, but like I think like, you know, in grappling, it's like a deeper level. Yeah, there's a deeper level of like critical thinking and like problem, like dynamic problem solving. So, yeah, that's what really kept me in jiu-jitsu, I think.
You know, jiu-jitsu is kind of like if philosophy was a martial art, it would be jiu-jitsu, I think.
I really do think so.
Yeah, it's just never ending. It just keeps going, and just figuring it out.
Yeah.
So in that time, I mean, that's a long time. What are your accolades? What have you achieved since then? What kind of a level are you up to now? What are some of your more proudest moments? Take us through that.
So currently I'm a brown belt in jiu-jitsu, so which is like one level before the final belt, which is a black belt. And then along the way, I think from the get-go, I was a lot younger back then, like, you know, very fiery. So I wanted to compete. I wanted to like prove myself. You know, when you're young, you want to prove that you're good. You know, I wanted to prove myself like to the team and of course to myself. Yeah, to myself and to my coach that like, you know, I'm a good fighter. So I competed a lot. I had quite a few good achievements. So when I was a white belt, when I was just starting, when I was a novice, I was, you know, a little bit on and off. You know, I would win some, I would lose some. I would lose more than I would win. But somewhere along the way, I kind of found my groove. And then, one of my proudest moments when I was competing regularly, when I was a blue belt, actually, I started to win a lot of competitions. I remember I competed like 13 times in a year or something. And then out of the 13 times, I lost the first two competitions. And then the rest of the 11, I just won gold. Yeah, I pretty much won the competition at blue belt for the whole year. Yeah,
that's crazy, man. Now you said something there. You said something. You said something clicked for you. Something changed. Mm. What was that? What was that defining moment? What do you think made that difference? Was it a particular event? Was it a thought that you suddenly realized? What was it?
Yeah, I think. Well, yeah, I should have touched on it more. It was more like it was a bit of a turning point in my jiu-jitsu. So when I lost my second competition in that year, I think it was 2015, I got injured middle of the fight. I think what happened, so like the guy got a throw on me, and then I think I popped my shoulder. It was like a sublux, so it popped in and out, and then it was really painful. Mm. And then, you know, from then on, like mentally, I couldn't continue. Like I was still fighting because, you know, there was still a lot of adrenaline, and I was still going, and I wanted to finish the fight, you know. But I lost because mentally I wasn't there, and then eventually I lost, and then I got really, really frustrated. And then at the end of the fight, you know, a really good training partner of mine, which is now one of the best jiu-jitsu guys in Australia, his name is Levi, he came up to me and he was like, man, what's going on? Like, you know, he asked me how I am, and just like, just voiced my frustration. Yeah, and then after that, 2 weeks later, the owner, one of the owners of the gym, he came up to me and said like, hey, you know, there's another competition. Do you want to do it? I was like, man, I just injured my shoulder. Like, I don't know if I want to do it. And then she said to me, there's only one person. So like, you only would have one fight. So like, you know, maybe consider it. And then at that point, I was like, man, I got nothing to lose. I was a lot younger. So I was like, you know, a little bit, you know, a bit reckless. I was like, I'm just going to do it. So I just like injured my shoulder 2 weeks ago and I decided to do this competition. And then I think in the competition, I just didn't have any expectations. I was like, I would just go in, I'll just do my thing. Whatever happens, happens. If I feel like my shoulder's in any danger, I'm just going to tap. I'm just going to go. There's like zero expectations. And then what happened, I think because of me like letting go of all the expectations, it just did really well. And then, from that point on, I just realized like, you know, win or lose, like as long as you give your best, it doesn't matter because you can't control the outcome of what you're doing, you know? Yeah. Absolutely. So like, once I let go of the stress and the thought and like the pressure of winning, I felt like I could perform a lot better. Yeah, I guess that was...
That's a really important point. Because a lot of people, that mentality... See, I get people on this podcast that are people that are successful in different fields, not just sports, you know, and not just jiu-jitsu. It could be another sport or it could be just another field with a business or whatever. And a lot of times I find that that's a commonality between people who do really well in whatever field that they have. And it's actually something in relation to, I don't know if you follow it so much yourself, but Stoic philosophy is actually a branch of philosophy that I'm interested in and I follow fairly closely. And one of the backbones of Stoic philosophy is actually exactly that, to only worry about what you can control and don't worry about everything else. And it helps with just anxiety in life in general, and anxiety in anywhere else, you know, whether it be just like you, the outcome of a match or whatever. Only worrying about what you can control really conserves energy, really gets you to focus, lets you focus on what is really important at the end of the day. And I assume that's something that you, because you coach there now, right? Now you've gone to become a coach, so
yes, yeah,
that's pretty fucking awesome itself. So I assume that's something that you teach the students yourself, you know, newcomers who also in the same sort of position, who don't know, they're a little bit anxious about getting into competition and stuff like that. Is that what you normally would tell them? What other advice do you have for people out there? Maybe people listen to this who want to get into their first competition, whether it's jiu-jitsu or wrestling or boxing or whatever, and they're just tossing up. They feel a little anxious. They don't know how it's going to go. They don't want to lose. You know, that's usually the first thought that comes across people's minds. What advice do you have for people like that?
I think I would say, especially if it's your first competition, you know, just go in, just have a feel for it, just have fun. You know, whatever happens, there's zero pressure. I mean, I would say to like anyone who's competing, there's zero pressure anyway, because like, you can't control your outcomes, you know. You can only control the training leading up to it, you know, how much effort you put in, and whatever happens, happens. Because like, you know, it is competition, it is very chaotic, there is a lot of different factors. And then, you know, some days might be just your day and some days might be someone else's day. You know, when you, you know, for good or for bad, like by chance you happen to go up against, you know, someone else who's very, very experienced, or like, you know, someone else who is a professional. Let's say you go into a wrestling competition, you're just doing it casually, and you go against this guy who's like training for Olympics. You know, most of the time, you know, the professional is going to have the upper hand. So like, you just got to realize like there are a lot of factors you can't control. You know, you just got to go in, just do your best. You know, end of the day, you know, just have fun and keep going in competition. You know, if it's today is not your day, you just got to realize like one day will be your day.
Yeah, so just going into competitions in of itself, you know, just throwing yourself in there and just being totally detached from the outcome and going again and again. Like a very good example are TIE fighters. How the, you know, by the time they are like, you know, 20, barely even, they've already had like 200, 300 fights because they're just constantly doing it all the time. And, you know, by that time, you the win or lose doesn't even matter anymore. It's just it's just a fact of like, it's much more deeper than that now. You know, it's about the idea of having heart, you know, having having pride in yourself and the hard work that you've put in, challenging yourself. These become the factors, the reasons, you know, for, I think, for fighters especially, and anybody else who really throws themselves in there, because it's easy to get caught up in numbers. People want to have an untouched, like a perfect record, you know. You've got definitely, like wrestlers out there who are like, you know, 150-0, you know, or 150-1 or something like that. Boxers who are like 50-0, you know, like a like a Mayweather or whatever. And I think people get caught up in numbers where they're like, I don't want to have like that blemish in my record. But the more you sort of protective of things like that, you kind of become protective essentially of experience. You stop yourself learning and stuff like that. It's a mindset that definitely takes time to sort of bring on. And as a coach, like you being a coach, it's probably one of the main struggles in trying to get people to understand that. Yeah, go on.
Yeah, sorry. So yeah, definitely. It's one of those things. It's like, you know, when you put more pressure on yourself, you just like, the more pressure you feel, like the less, usually most of the time, like the less well you perform, the more relaxed and like the more loose you are, you know, the better you perform. And a lot of the times it's like, you know, when you think of the best athletes in the world, when you think of like, you know, Michael Jordan, like Kobe Bryant, and like, well, Mayweather's the exception, but you know, like guys like that, you know, they've lost before they've won. You know, a lot of them, they've went through adversity. And I think like a lot of the time, like we need to like, you know, to go through that adversity, you know, at any level of adversity, like the, of course, the bigger the adversity, like, you know, the more you learn from it. But, you know, we have to go through a bit of struggle. There's no, you know, one person who has have everything given to him in his life. And then like, he just like becomes the best ever because he's never been through adversity. So he doesn't understand the feeling of like, you know, how bad a loss is. Yeah, and then, you know, the best champions, I think, like, the most respectable ones are the ones that, like, who came back from adversity. For example, like, someone like Ronda Rousey, when she lost, she didn't really come back. You know, she didn't perform to a level where she was before. She was a little bit broken. And now she's kind of, like, forgotten, you know, like, I'm using MMA as an example. But, like, someone like, you know, GSP, you know, he's lost. You know, he came back, he won, he got injured, you know, he was retired, and he came back and he did amazing, you know, and we regard him as like one of the best of all time. So I think, yeah, it is important for people to understand, you know, like going through like a little bit of adversity is like, it's not the worst thing in the world.
I think it's the best thing in the world. I think that's what really polishes somebody's character for the long term. The adversity is super necessary in the words of Jorge Masvidal himself. Tell us. I can't wait for that fight, man. That's this weekend, eh? Who you got for that one?
Oh, it's hard to say, man. Like, I like Usman, but I don't know how much training Jorge has been doing. Like, I feel like he's just
because he got called in last minute.
Yeah, he got called in last minute, and then like apparently he has to do like a big weight cut, and then like another thing. Another thing my friend just told me yesterday, because he's been to into Abu Dhabi, it's like 40 degrees, 50 degrees, in the noon. So like, I don't know, man, like, you know, having a big weight cut, I don't know, whatever it is, like, I think it's going to be a bit of a wild fight. It's going to be a good one.
I can't wait.
Yeah, it's going to be a good one.
Yeah, I don't know how that one, see, the thing with Jorge is his... he is a proper fighter. He's a like fighter through and through. He's just got a fighter's heart. Nothing about that guy is faked or put on or anything like that. That is him legit. He's ready for a fight.
Man, he just loves to fight, you know. And I think we're going to get a fight.
And he's good. He is good.
He's amazing. Yeah.
Like that fighter mentality in him, he doesn't break. He's like a proper street kid, you know. Usman is supposed to have an advantage on paper, I reckon, on this one. I don't know if he's going to win, but he definitely does have the advantage because he's been training for a fight, so he should be ready. And plus, I dare say he would probably do a little bit better in the heat.
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know.
We'll see. Yeah.
I can't wait for this. So tell us a little bit about Garage, man. Tell us about the gym as a whole and the crew there, the founders, the accomplishments of the gym in of itself. Because, you know, even me myself not being a, having been involved in BJJ for, you know, years upon years like yourself, even I know it and there's mad respect for that gym. tell us about the crew over there.
Yeah, so the owner is Guy, and then the other owner is Gabi, and then so I think when I first joined Garage, which is still true today, you know, what made me stay and what really, really inspired me was like, I feel like the owners, you know, the instructors there, they really give you the time, you know. I remember the first time I joined up to the gym, and then, you know, before we get our next belt, we get a stripe, you know, we get like a level, like a dan. Yeah. So it was like, you know, my turn to get a stripe, right? So I came up to the line. This was like the second week I was there or something. And he looked into me, he looked into my eyes, and he said to me, "I'm going to make you a good fighter." And like, I think from that on, like, I knew, like, man, like, you know, this is the place I want to be, you know, this is who I want to, you know, who I want to train under. It's like, it really like inspired me, especially like a very like early stage. It really inspired me. And I think, just that level of like, you know, wanting to push your fighters and wanting the best for them, I think is like what really attracted me to stay there. And then I think because, you know, the culture of a gym or culture of any workplace is always top down. So like when the leaders are like really strong and the leaders are really believe in what they do and they really push like a certain culture, everything just falls into place, you know.
100%, man.
Yeah, because 100%. In our gym at Garage, we are very respectful. You know, we train hard, but we don't go crazy. You know, we never try to injure anyone. And that's all because like this how the culture is, you know, the leader, you know, Guy, he set this culture, you know, we've done it for a long time. And then just everything just falls into place. And even if we get like, you know, visitors visiting, like, you know, some people just they come in, they just want to prove themselves, you know, they want to go really hard, just want to like injure everyone. You know, people like that, they don't stay. Like they just don't last. They just come in, they train, you know, like they want to injure everyone and everyone just goes a little bit harder on him. And, you know, because people are pretty good there, you know, pretty there's a pretty high level in our gym. And then it just breaks them. They try to, you know, when the bully gets bullied, you know. Yeah. So so that's what I think that's the gym culture that we have there. And then for achievements wise, yeah. So I used to train with this guy, like a training partner of mine. His name is Levi. You know, I've mentioned him a little bit earlier before. And man, I've watched this kid grow like from the first day. Like we joined the gym around the same time. He was 16 at the time. And then there was just something about him. I was like, man, this kid is insane. And then, you know, so we trained together. Like he was training full time because he quit school to start training. And then he just got better and better. And then, like, you know, he was really, really into jiu-jitsu. And then, like, I think what really catapulted Garage jiu-jitsu to fame was one reason was because of him, the Levi, because he was very, very good. And then he got really, really famous in Australia first, right? He goes really good. Everyone started noticing him, like, man, this kid is, like, insane. And then he started going overseas, and he started having, like, insane success overseas. And then, then nowadays he's like one of the top jiu-jitsu practitioners in Australia. So yeah, and then although he's not.
When you say,
yeah.
Sorry to cut you off. When you say he went overseas, What did he achieve overseas?
Yeah, he went overseas to train with one of the, you know, the top guys in America. And yeah, he was so there are like four big competitions in Jiu-Jitsu. So they call it the Europeans, the Pan Americans, Abu Dhabi, and the World Championships. So when he was a brown belt, I think he won the Europeans, he won the Pan Americans. I think he lost Abu Dhabi, I'm not sure. But anyway, yeah, and then he won the World Championships. That's what, like, when everyone started to, like, notice him. Yeah, and then, like, you know, when he was a, when he was, like, a blue belt, he was already beating, like, other brown belts. So when he only had, like, 3 years of jiu-jitsu experience, he was beating people with, like, 8 or 10 years of jiu-jitsu experience, which is, like, you know, insane and unheard of. And then I was very, very lucky to be training with Levi, like, a lot. So I think, you know, iron sharpens iron, right? So, like, you know, training with him a lot, like, really inspired me to raise my level. And then I think because we had someone like him, that's why our gym was so good. Yeah. And then, of course, there was also because of the wheels of Gi as well, because he made that the environment, you know, he was never afraid.
Yes.
I think he was he always showed, like, all of us that, you know, he's willing to evolve. You know, he had a very set way of doing jiu-jitsu in the past, you know, and but he's not afraid of, like, trying something new, like, you know, evolving his ways, you know, like, oh, this is like what jiu-jitsu is like nowadays. So he started to change his style. You know, he sees, like, Levi having success, and then he would defer to him. You know, I think that's a very big thing, like, for your, like, head instructor to defer to someone who was a student, you know, maybe asking him, like, questions about a certain technique or something, because he knows, like, Levi is better at this technique than all of us, better than him as well. Like, he doesn't have a big ego. Yeah, I think that's one of the main things that make Gara Jiu-Jitsu such a great place to train at, you know?
Yeah, I think what you just said there, something that you touched on, is very important. For a leader to not have an ego is very important. When there is somebody else on the team and they're genuinely, they've got a good idea or they have something that they can add, a lot of people who are in an ownership position or in a leadership position, they get this insecurity, like they feel like they're being undermined or they might lose their position or lose their job. But the right person, the right way to do it is to actually let that person take on some of that role, you know, and encourage them to do that. That's actually the right thing to do as far as leadership is concerned. And you're right. It does stem from the top down. Absolutely. What the leader does, what the person who's the owner does, what, you know, anybody who's in that top position does really does trickle down. Everybody looks to that person. If it's a person that is a bully, you know, wants to prove himself all the time to people and have this weird vibe, other people will learn to be like that, you know what I mean? And that's how the gym will be. It's just not a good place to train. It's a lot of there's nothing constructive about it, you know, for the long term. And so that's very important. How long have you been a coach there for now?
I started in 2015, so about 5 years now. So yeah, actually, and I have just a funny story.
That's all you do, eh?
That's all I do now. So before, as I mentioned, like, right in the start, I came to Australia to study, right? I don't know if you guys, like, I didn't touch on my studies anymore. So I finished my studies in 2014, right? So I finished my studies and I went for a holiday, right? Whatever. I went for a holiday. I came back. I was like, man, what should I do? Like, you know, in Asian culture, like, I have to be like an engineer, a doctor, or like a lawyer, right? I was an engineer. So, you know, I was like, you know what? I'm going to try this engineering thing. So I applied for a job. I went to engineering. I worked for 8 months, right?
What field of engineering?
Sorry?
What field of engineering? What kind of engineering?
Renewable energy. It's like solar panels and like wind turbines and stuff. So I worked for like a renewable energy company for 8 months. And I hated every second of it. Like, From the time when I reached the office, I was like, man, I just want to be training right now. Like when the clock would, when the clock would hit 5, I was like, sorry guys, I got to get to training because the training starts at 6, right? So I was like, sorry guys, bang, I'm gone. Left the office every day at 5. Yeah. So
straight to the mats and just taking arms home. Just
exactly. Yeah. Souls home. Training. But then the thing is, like, you know, when you do like a mentally draining job for like 8 hours, 9 hours a day, it just like messes with you. So like at the time in those 8 months, I wasn't very happy with my jiu-jitsu. Wasn't very happy with my life in general, actually, because I was waking up, you know, going to work, training, finish training at 9. I had to go to bed at like 11 so I could wake up the next morning. I was just like in this like cycle, like a little bit of a, you know, I felt like a little bit trapped in the cycle. And then at the end of 8 months, like my probationary period was gone, was done. So they were like, you know, hey, we really want you, the guys in the engineering office, they said like, hey, we really want you to join our team. So like, you know, these are the papers, this is the contract. What do you want to do? So then I looked my supervisor in the eye. I was like, I think I'm going to do this jiu-jitsu thing. And then they looked at me. They were like, they were all confused. All three of them, they looked at me like, what? Excuse me? Because they all expected me to like sign up. Because it was the dream of like, you know, every undergrad, you know, just to work in something they like, you know. And then I was like, I'm going to quit. So I just quit my job. I was like, see you guys, I'm gonna quit. And so I quit my job, and then I went to the gym, and then
that's fucking awesome.
Yeah. And then I just don't want to do this anymore. I tried it. So quit my job, went to the gym, and I told Guy and Gabi, I was like, is there anything I can do? And then luckily enough, you know, for me, I think at that time they were going away for 2 weeks. So I could do all the, you know, cleaning the gym and like being a receptionist. And then I started teaching the kids, you know, and that's slowly from there. I started teaching the kids, and then, you know, I got a bit of teaching experience from there. I started teaching the adults, and slowly, I'm where I am now. So yeah, that's a bit of my story.
Man, that's so good. I mean,
it's been wild.
I gotta say, congratulations to you, and that's. Oh, they are or they're not?
They're not happy. Yeah, they're still thinking of me like, oh, when are you gonna quit doing this gym thing and just do engineering? I was like, oh, it's not what I do now.
Yeah, man.
Yeah,
it's you know, the Asian culture, the Middle Eastern culture. It's a lot of commonalities in that regards. My mum was much the same when I had a very good job, pretty secure job at the time, and then I quit because I just, same much like you, I just hated going to work in that kind of environment. But good on you, man. That's it takes balls to do that, and especially after doing, you know, something like engineering, and especially having been where you are. No doubt you were in a very you know, secure place with your job, and you know, renewable energy is certainly a field that's not going anywhere. It's just going to expand and everything. Growing, so, yeah, absolutely. So, look, obviously, you have something to fall back on if this jiu-jitsu thing doesn't work out. But that still takes guts, man. It takes guts to do that, and I'm happy that it worked out for you. In your experience, what does it take to be a good coach, to get the most out of people?
Well, I think,
what is a good coach?
Yeah, that's a hard question. So I think a coach, you have to know where you're taking people to. So you got to see the end goal. I think having a vision, that's like a style of like being a coach, where you can take your students to. Like, you know, you see them today, like, oh, maybe this person like just started. Like, you got to have an idea, like, in your mind, like, where the end point is. And, like, maybe, like, long-term goals and short-term goals. So, like, maybe in, like, 3 years, like, I want to take this person to this level. And then, like, but then, like, in 6 months, you have to do this first. I think that's, like, number one. And then, like, another thing you have to do is, like, you have to understand, like, the dynamic of who you're teaching. Because not every student is the same. You know, if... Of course, every coach, they have their own style. Like, I obviously have my own style. You know, you have your own style. Like, he has his own style. You know, Floyd Mayweather Senior has his own style. But then you have to start to understand how you can use like the style of your coaching to bring out the best in your student. Yeah, whether it be like one student, like one-on-one kind of coaching, or like a class. In the class, you can do it in a more like general sense. But if you do on one-on-one coaching, I think it's more important, like how you can suit like your style of coaching to how you can benefit your student the most. Yeah, because like I feel like you can't be rigid as a coach. Yeah, you have to
exactly
continuously learn. Yeah, because although we use the term coach, but you are also the student. You know, you have to be a student of like what you're teaching. You know, you can't say like I have mastered jiu-jitsu, I am the best in the world, because that's not true. And yeah, and then just understanding that like there's a lot to learn, and then you can learn just as much from your student as you can, you know, they can learn from you. So I think, you know, it's a good thing to have, is to understand how you can use, you know, your coaching ability to bring out the best in your students. I think, yeah, that's what makes a good coach.
Well, that's a very good answer, and I agree.
Thank you.
Especially in regards to not being rigid, which what you said, and you know, and that involves really understanding the personality type of who you're dealing with. You know, what their story is, what makes them tick, what motivates them. You know, everybody comes to everybody who's at the gym. You know, whether it's a gym for weights or a jiu-jitsu gym or whatever. They're all there to learn jiu-jitsu or to pump weights, but they're all there for a different reason to learn jiu-jitsu or pump weights. Something else motivates them, each of them differently. And to be able to figure that out and then use that to fuel them and drive them and teach them about themselves is that that's that sweet spot. That's really what it's what it really comes down to be able to get them to sort of find themselves. For somebody who's starting out, let's just say somebody who has some decent amount of athleticism, so they get things quickly, like they understand concepts and stuff like that fairly quickly, and they want to get to a national level as somebody in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. How long do you think that normally takes? What's the average that it takes for somebody to get to that kind of level?
I think to be at like a decent like level in Jiu-Jitsu, like a decent level that you would say like, oh, this guy's pretty good, you know? I think I would say it would take about 2 years. 2 years of like at least training 3 to 4 times a week. I would say about 2 years. Yeah, because,
4 times a week, eh?
Yeah, 3 to 4 times a week, ideally. About 2 years. I know it sounds like a long time, but then, man, jiu-jitsu is a hard sport, man. Like, grappling, wrestling, it's a hard sport, man. It's not like, you know, it's not to take anything away from striking, but I think, like, you know, people feel like they're making progress in striking a lot quicker than they think than making progress in grappling. I think the progress in grappling, the first like 6 months to a year, it's very, very slow because there's just so many aspects to it. And like, you know, you have to move your whole body. I mean, it's not to say like you don't move your whole body in other sports, but then like, I think the amount that you progress in the first like 6 months to a year is very, very slow. Yeah, and then after about a year, you start to understand like, oh, you know, how your body moves, you know, the ranges and like how people react. And I think from there on, like you start to like, find your own style, and then like eventually about 2 years, you know, if the student is like dedicated to the sport, they can get to a pretty good level.
What do you think are the most most important factors to help you get to that to that top level of competition? And when I say factors, I mean, so between things like fitness, strength, you know, explosive ability, things like that. What have you found? Maybe at different stages, it's a different thing. Maybe as a beginner, it's different. Maybe and then as an intermediate, when you're past your blue belt, for example, and up, it's different. And then towards black belt, maybe it's different again. What have you found to be, for you at least, in your stages, getting up to brown belt, really, you know, important to develop? That's really helped when you do develop it.
Yeah, I think I would say perseverance, you know, like to persevere and like to like, you know, ride through the hard times. And I think also like an understanding, let me help with it. Like, I think like understanding that like, you know, what you are today, you know, is not representative of like how it will be in the future. You know, the understanding like you are progressing, but like sometimes you might not be able to see it. You know, it's like looking in the mirror every day as you're like growing up as a kid, like you don't see any difference. But when someone else sees you, like they can see the difference. I think it just, knowing that like it's hard to track your progress in jiu-jitsu. Yeah, and then like, even though you feel you're not progressing, you know, when you measure yourself against like someone else, because like when you do jiu-jitsu against everyone, the same people in the gym all the time, they're all progressing together. So it's hard to track their progress. But then maybe when you go to competition or you get someone else, when the visitor comes into the gym, you can see like, oh, you know, I have actually progressed, you know, and then understanding that. And just like persevering and then like understanding where you want to go. Yeah, I think those are the most important factors.
That's very true, man. I'd never thought about it like that because it can be actually a little bit, you know, off-putting, kind of frustrating where you think like, oh, man, I've been training for so long, I'm not really getting better. But you're right. When you're training at the same gym, you're training alongside the same people and they're all training at about the same number of days per week as you. So everybody's progressing together. So it feels like you're at a standstill. But really, you're all progressing together. So you're getting better together. You're right. And that's something that a lot of especially newcomers need to keep in mind. The thing is, though, of course, it's important just with anything to sort of measure yourself to see, well, it's been, you know, 3 months. How much better am I? So in a case like that, what do you suggest? That people go to different gyms and try that out. People enter a competition every so often. Like, how often do you recommend that people go into a competition from the very beginning? Like, you know, somebody who's just starting out, how long after starting as a white belt do you think that they can compete? Can they go straight away? And then after that, how often should they compete?
Well, I would say after about 6 months, you can start like thinking about competition, because, you know, competition jiu-jitsu is a little bit different from like normal training. And then, you know, everybody wants to do well in a competition, right? Because if you have a bad, like first experience in competition, like you never want to do it again. So I would say about 6 months. And, you know, to your point about like testing yourself, you know, even if you don't compete, you know, you can test yourself in different ways in the gym by like just trying something different. You know, maybe you've always done something one way, but if you challenge yourself, if you're like honest with yourself and say like, hey, maybe I'm not good at this, like this technique or this position, I'm going to force myself, you know, to go into this position and then, you know, try to go from there. You know, that's also like another way to like test yourself if you don't want to do a competition. Yeah.
Yeah. What is the average turnaround time for comp prep? So, you know, how much time would you want a fighter to know ahead of time that a comp's coming, so to prepare? How many weeks?
Jiu-jitsu competitions are still considered amateur competitions. So I would say I wouldn't put too much into it. So I would say about maybe 4 to 6 weeks, I would say. 4 to 6 weeks is like a pretty good amount of time to like get prepared for competition. Like, it's a bit, little bit different from like MMA, where it's a professional stance. You got to get your cardio up to speed. And, you know, you have like a proper like training break, a proper training period. But then for someone who's like a casual, you know, I would say like 4 to 6 weeks, you know, just to get the mindset, just to understand like, you know, this is the goal, you know, in 6 weeks, you're going to compete. You need to get to like this level or at least get to where they think they're comfortable to compete, I would say. And
In relation to that, for somebody who does pick a comp, say 6 weeks from now, as a white belt, this is their first comp or one of their first comps. What do you normally yourself get people to what kind of advice do you have for people to say, okay, this is your first comp, do these types of things to make it the easiest for yourself? These are the things that I learned for myself, and for other people who have coached before. Do this and this to make it as smooth as possible, to reduce anxiety as much as possible for your first comp, and just have a good experience.
Well, it's different for everyone. I think what I would tell them is, like, from a jiu-jitsu set point of view, I would say, like, just stick to what you know. Like, competition is nothing different. It's, the only difference is you're in a different setting. But sometimes, like, you can look at this competition as, like, a really, really tough role in the gym, like a really hard sparring session. That's all it is. It's a really hard sparring session with someone you don't know. It's just all you got to think what it is. And then you just got to stick to what you know, because, like, I think, especially when you're a white belt, there's just so many things you don't know. So it's just better to stick to, like, what the instructor have taught you, if someone were to prepare for a competition, I would try to, like, streamline the process for them. If it's the first time, they're like, okay, you're pretty good at wrestling, you used to play footy, you go for a double leg, you stay on top, like, you pass his guard, and if you can, you submit him. But if not, just hold him down for 5 minutes, something like that, like, just to make it, like, easy for them. I just play to their strengths. Yeah, just play to your strengths, do what you've been doing in training, just go and have fun. And maybe, that's just the competition aspect of it. But, competition in jiu-jitsu is not just that. There's the stuff before. There's, like, the weigh-ins and, the waiting time, like, the registration. And then for those things, I would just, maybe just put them aside, maybe, like, 2 weeks before competition. I'll just tell them the whole process, like, what to expect when you go in, when you get the times you're going to fight, like, what you should do, maybe you shouldn't, like, eat a big meal 30 minutes before your fight, it's just little things like that, just to make sure they have a smooth competition experience. And then once they've done it a few times, like, most of them, they get their own little groove, they listen to music, and they go to the bathroom, like, 7 times before they compete, like, whatever, like, they get into their own little groove, they have their own little things they want to do. Yeah.
That actually reminds me of, because obviously I do wrestling, and a lot of the wrestlers that I speak to, they say something very similar. Even at an advanced level, they are like, what we do, and these are like, I'm talking about ex-Iranian wrestlers, like national mm-hmm. level mm-hmm. and Olympic level wrestlers and stuff like that. What they would say is, what we would do is we would take one or two signature moves, basically, right? Mm. Things that we really liked and mm-hmm. we just were good at. And we would just figure out 1,000 ways to set that move up. So, if it's a single leg, for example, mm-hmm. and then, going into a double leg, they would figure out all these different ways to just set you up for a single leg going into a double leg. That's it. Mm-hmm. They, mm-hmm. if they saw another opportunity, of course they'll take it, but they wouldn't worry about trying to go for all these other fancy, crazy moves and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. It's just one or two things that it was their favorite, and they mm-hmm. just liked it, and they knew it and understood it well, and they just focused on that. And they would, for the whole entirety of the match, they would just do everything they can to set you up and open you up for that particular move. And so I would say, logically, well, doesn't everybody know that that's what you're going to go for? And they're like, yes, they all do, but they still can't stop it because you figured it out so many different ways. You know what I mean?
So
I think that's very good advice, like in line with what you said. Just stick to your strengths and just figure it out. Just keep going for that. And especially in the earlier days, it gives you less to think about. So it reduces anxiety. And by the way, like for people listening to this, all of this stuff doesn't just apply to jiu-jitsu. It applies to like any endeavor, any sport, anything that you're first getting into and stuff like that. You can adopt these same principles because mindset is mindset, you know? And these are things that are people who are like successful in their particular field, whether it's a sport or business or whatever. These are the types of things that they're doing. They're just sticking to basic stuff and just figuring out how to do it better than anybody else. And people can see it coming from 1,000 miles away, but they still can't do anything to stop it. So with that being said, what's your favorite move? What's your signature move?
I like attacking from the back, you know, getting to the back position where you go for like rear naked chokes and like chokes from the back. That's my favorite. So for a long time, I focused on like, you know, just doing one thing for a long time when I was a blue belt and purple belt and then to brown belt still. I started attacking the back because it was the most efficient way to finish a fight. And I would find, as you said before, I would find every opportunity for my opponent to expose their back position and then get them from there. So like what I did, like, you know, to a, you know, decent degree at some point in my my career, it was like I would start to like pass the guard. So I would force them onto their side and then take the back from there and then finish the fight. Yeah. So that was my go-to move.
That's still your strategy now, I assume.
It is still, because it's the, you know, the best way to finish a fight. You know, they can't fight when they're when the back's exposed to you.
Absolutely. Talk about your take us through. I mean, with such a demanding sport, no doubt you've had your fair share of injuries. What are probably some of the worst ones you've had? What are some of the worst ones you've seen in competitions and stuff like that? Paint a nice picture for us there.
Yeah. So I'll start with the first ones, the ones I had. Early in my jiu-jitsu career, when I was a white and blue belt, I actually have a very weak shoulder. So there was this competition I did as a white belt. Actually, I dislocated my shoulder. So I think it was my right shoulder. So it was never fully dislocated, but there was a sublux. So it popped in and out. Right. So that was the shoulder injury number one. And then the following year, you know, I went all the way to Europe to compete, you know, in the Europeans in Portugal. And then in the first match, in the second minute, I dislocated my left shoulder. I flew all the way there. I dislocated my left shoulder. I lost, like, it was a close fight, but like I couldn't really fight. I was like, oh, I was really pissed. And then I dislocated my right shoulder. I think it was my right shoulder again. That was the turning point of the story I touched on earlier. Yeah, so those were my worst injuries. And then, you know, I had a little, like, you know, cuts here and there. You know, I had a massive head clash with one of my training partners one day. You know, we just like came up at the same time, we clashed heads, and there was a huge gash. And then like we stood up, we looked at each other, we're like, man, you're bleeding. But in actual fact, both of us were bleeding. We had a massive gash like over our eyebrows. Yeah. So that was pretty much the worst one. But
head gashes, like they just don't stop.
Just open up so easily, yeah. I had to get like 4 stitches. But I have to say, like, I was pretty lucky on like the injury front. I have like little like niggly injuries, like my ankle hurts a little bit, my fingers hurt a little bit. But I have to say, like, weight training, like strength training, helps with like injury prevention, like a lot. You know, I do know this, like, I you know, because of like I've lifted weights for a while pretty regularly. I do like 3 or 4 times a week. Man, it's really helped me with like injury prevention because, like, you know, my joints are like so used to taking the load. I feel like that has really, really helped me, you know, from prevented me from getting injured. You know, I've seen like, it's not to say like other people, you know, they're weak joints or whatever. Like, you know, people who don't lift as regularly or as like as much as I do, like they do tend to get like a little bit more injured because, like, I don't know, you probably know this more than me, like I feel like the joints and the muscles like not as used to taking that load, so they're like more prone to injury.
100% yeah. Man, that's a total thing. Yes.
Yeah.
So with athletes, with anybody who trains regularly, what happens is, for people listening, the tissue of the ligaments and tendons that are around the ligaments around the joint and tendons that attach to muscles to joints, to bone, they actually lay down more fiber. The fibers get thicker and they get accustomed to taking on load and a beating, basically, in essence. So anybody who's stronger, who's been weight training for longer, is going to be more injury resistant. And not only that, when they do get injured, they will come back from an injury much quicker. So weight training, that's why strength and conditioning just in general is crucial, especially for like contact sports, combat sports, because you're constantly just getting battered. And you need to have the body be resilient to take on those kind of forces. And also like... you know, strength helps, especially with jiu-jitsu. For example, if you're just a little bit later in defending yourself from an armbar, you can sort of pull back a little bit. You can hold yourself a little bit until you maybe wiggle out of a little bit of a space or stuff like that. When you're weaker, it's much, much harder, especially in sports like grappling sports. Now, like speaking of which, actually, how effective – do you think jiu-jitsu is for – I know the answer to this, but I want you to tell me.
Yeah.
For, you know, real-life street defense. And take us a little bit through sort of like the evolution of jiu-jitsu over the years, because now you've got places that do jiu-jitsu for the sport of jiu-jitsu, you know, a lot of technicalities around the gi and how to use the gi and stuff like that. No gi is starting to have an emergence, it seems. Forgive my ignorance if I'm wrong, but this is what I see. Yeah. Mm-hmm. What's the difference between them? And yeah, how effective is it in a real life scenario?
Yeah, so, well, jiu-jitsu was started because of self-defense. So I think, you know, the main crux of jiu-jitsu is focused around self-defense. So yes, it is very, very effective, you know. There's a big part of like any kind of like special forces or like any kind of like hand-to-hand combat training for like, you know, the army or like the police forces and stuff, they all have grappling in it. And then pretty much it's all like based from like judo and jiu-jitsu. So like, because using technique and leverage, you know, is very, very effective. You know, especially in a self-defense situation, you know, maybe not law enforcement, but like, you know, if you're on the street and somebody wants to strangle you, or maybe, you know, you're at home, you know, in a domestic violence situation where, you know, someone wants to attack you, you know, yeah, it's very, very, very effective in like subduing, you know, a bigger, stronger opponent. Yeah. Oh, sorry, what was your second question? The evolution.
The emergence and the evolution of, different types of sport, you know, places that do sport jiu-jitsu, they do a lot of just focus on the actual sport. So it's not very self-defense-y. And other places, and things like no-gi and gi and differences between them, stuff like that.
Yeah, so actually the evolution of the sport is like, it's pretty interesting. So I think it's kind of happened with like, I would say like, MMA as well, and like maybe some other like different sports like basketball, you know, where like people are less physical, you know, like, you know, back in the day, you know, especially, you know, BJJ and MMA as well, like back in the day, people are like real fighters, they want to fight, you know, especially like BJJ having like backgrounds from Brazil, where like people like, you know, the mean streets of Brazil, you know, they really have to defend themselves and, you know, stuff like that. So like in the earlier days of jiu-jitsu, I feel like the people are like more physical and they stick to like a few things they do, right? And in jiu-jitsu before, you know, before it was like modernized now and before the days of the internet, like techniques were very, very school dependent. So like if you're like in a particular school number A or something, you do like these set of techniques. In school number B, you know, like three blocks down the road, they do different set of techniques. Yeah, so like it's very like specific. So like people are very good at what they do. But then nowadays, like, I feel like people are not as much like fighters anymore, which is not a bad thing, but people become more professional in the sport of like MMA and in jiu-jitsu as well. Like, they become athletes. So they become like more specific to what they do. They become more efficient. Instead of wanting to get into like a brawl, like a full on like grappling exchange, you know, they want to do more technical things. They want to be more efficient. I think, which is you know, just how things are, like just the evolution of the
sport. Do you like that? Do you not like that? What's your view on that?
I think I actually do like it because it's like I think it just makes the sport more efficient. You know, I feel like it's more becoming more of an art, like a martial art, like the art to the martial art, rather than the fighting aspect of the martial art. It is still like a combat sport, you know, but then it is more like an art and a science rather than like just a fight. You know, it is more like
Do you think it's losing that savagery? Do you think and do you think that's a bad thing? Do you think it loses that element of primitive fight element, mm-hmm. you know, where man versus man, you know, sort of thing, survival, where it is a little bit, you know, or was, I guess, mm-hmm. a little bit more aggressive because there were more, you know, actual fighters involved in it. Yep. And now it's more like athletes are involved in it and trying to improve things, which is not a bad thing. But do you think it's a bad thing that change in the spirit is there? Do you think that's a bad thing?
You know, I don't think it's a bad thing. I do think there is less aggression. Of course, people are still very, very competitive. Like the top competitors, they're like insanely competitive. But I think, you know, it's different in a sense that like it becomes more of a game. You know, people are trying to gain like the tiniest bit of advantage over the other person. And I think it's a good thing for the sport, evolution of the sport in general. And then it just really depends on what you want to focus on. If, you know, you're doing jiu-jitsu for like self-defense, fitness, and like overall lifestyle, then yes, maybe you want to focus a little bit more on like, you know, how I can defend myself, you know, how I can position myself. But if you want to compete, you know, you want to be a pro in this sport, you want to make money out of it, you know, you eventually want to open a jiu-jitsu school and you want people to come, you know, maybe you want to focus on like getting, you know, playing the game the best way, the most efficient way to get the victory. You know, I think it's just an understanding of like what your end goal is. You know, if you want to, you know, play the sport, you got to play the sport. You got to learn the rules, you know. If you want to do the self-defense part, then, you know, maybe you want to focus a little bit more on that, you know. Yeah, it just really depends on like what you want to focus on. It is not like good or bad in any sense. It's just a little bit different. It's just an evolution of how it is.
Just different. Yeah, I know what you mean. What about why has no gi had an emergence, and what's the difference between that and gi? The main difference is obviously other than not wearing the gi. How does that change things, and why has it had such an emergence?
Yeah. Okay. So for no gi, right? So you don't wear the kimono. You only wear a rash guard and shorts, right? Or you go shirtless. It's up to you. But then I think it's really had an emergence because in gi jiu-jitsu, it has been a little bit stale. Like, as you said before, like, you know, the game has changed. Like, people are trying to, like, get the tiniest little advantage. I think for a point in time, maybe, like, 3-4 years ago, it kind of got a bit stagnant. Like, people were, like, sitting down in the bomb, they're not really fighting. They just try to eke out the tiniest little advantage. They were using, you know, every bit of the every tiniest rule to like get the best advantage, you know. So it kind of got a little bit stale. So like people started like not enjoying aesthetically like how gi jiu-jitsu looked, you know. And then I think because of the emergence of no gi, right, and it was like people started like experimenting a little bit more. People started adding like different rule sets, you know. People started allowing like different submissions, and then it's a lot more fast paced. You know, it's a lot easier for someone, you know, who doesn't know jiu-jitsu like to understand. Like it's wrestling, like wrestling, right? Like someone who doesn't know wrestling, they know who's winning and who's not. You pin someone down, like the guy on the bottom is losing, right? So I think no-gi has a little bit of element to that. Like it's a little bit easier for the casual fan to understand like what no-gi grappling is. And also like with the tie-in with MMA, because MMA is pretty much no-gi grappling, right? So no-gi grappling also like appeals to the casual MMA fan. Yeah, it's no-gi is, you know, they're more experimental. They like evolve a little bit better with the times. And then I think nowadays the no-gi is just a little bit more exciting and more dynamic than the gi. Yeah, so that's why it's like getting more popular.
Yeah, it's. I assume it's also just easier to get into because, well, the expense-wise, right? You don't have to,
buy
a gi. It's kind of like powerlifting. So, like listeners who are powerlifters will relate to this. Powerlifting for the longest time was needed equipment, so knee wraps and particularly like squat suit and a bench shirt and a deadlift suit, and each of those cost a couple of $100s. And so and then you also needed like a basically like an entourage to come with you to wrap your knees to help you get into your squat suit and stuff like that. And then raw lifting came along where you just basically just wear knee sleeves and a belt. Even they're not mandatory. You can just wear it if you like to. You don't need any particular shoes or any particular equipment. So it was very much easier to get into as a sport, much cheaper to get into as a sport, much better understood as a sport. And so, yeah, for the exactly the same reasons, it really helped powerlifting explode since 2010. So do you foresee that no-gi will continue to rise? Do you foresee that it will take over gi, like how raw powerlifting has taken over equipped lifting?
Yeah. I think so. I think nowadays, like, no-gi is more popular, you know, and then, like, people still watch the gi. I think, like, there will still be, like, you know, certain part of jiu-jitsu who are, like, only dedicated to the gi. But I think no-gi is, like, slowly starting to emerge, you know, as the more popular version. And then, you know, you start to see, like, people who only do no-gi grappling. They don't do any MMA. They don't do any gi grappling. It just like focus on no-gi grappling, and they're just like specialists in that. I think maybe like 10, 15 years ago, that was like a little bit frowned upon. You're like a little bit of like a hipster to do that. But now it's really, really common, you know? And then now they're doing like no-gi exclusive events. Yeah, I think because of like, you know, how dynamic and how like aesthetically pleasing no-gi is, you know, how easy to get into it is as well, has really, really catapulted no-gi to like, you know, where it is today compared to like 15 years ago, 10, 15 years ago.
Yeah. Difference-wise, with no-gi, it's easier to attack or defend compared to gi?
I would say it's easier to defend. I think no-gi, what no-gi does is like, you know, strength and athleticism like plays a bigger part. You know, it is more of like, you know, even if you're like really, really technical and you face someone who's like a lot bigger and stronger than you, you're going to have a hard time because no-gi is like, it's a little bit less technical than the gi, I would say. Like, you know, strength and athleticism like plays a bigger part. So if you're bigger and stronger and like faster, like it does help. It's similar to wrestling in a way, like, you know, you can have the best, like, you know, the best takedowns in the world. But if you fight a really big, strong guy who has like some basic wrestling, you're going to have a hard time. You know, because I think that's where no-gi is like headed to nowadays.
And as far as the sport itself in Australia, like to go to overseas, compete at world championships and European championships and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Can you get that funded? Can you get like? If you're like really good, can you get the governing body to pay for that, or do you have to pay your own way there? How does that work?
Yeah, man. Unfortunately for us, for jiu-jitsu, it is still an amateur sport. So any fees that you know that you incur going overseas and stuff, I would say you have to fork it out of your own pocket unless you have sponsors. And then to get sponsored is like a little bit different. Like, you know, it's few and far in between. Like, you know, you get sponsors from like your jiu-jitsu gym, maybe everybody chips in like $100 to help you fly there. That's not uncommon, you know. That is pretty common. Like, you know, we've done it for like for my teammate Levi, you know, stuff like that. But I would say like, yeah, it's still an amateur sport. And then for most of the gi competitions, like, it's changing a little bit now, but for most of the gi competition, it's still an amateur sport. Anyone can join the competition, and then like anyone can register, and then you don't get any prize money out of it. So, you know, It is just, yeah, it is an experience. It is, yeah, it is, yeah. You just get a medal. You just get a nice medal at the end of the day, an experience.
Yeah.
That's pretty much it. So, yeah.
Bragging rights, yeah.
Yeah, you just gotta, it is, yeah, just bragging rights, and yeah, you just gotta pay your own way for it. So it is.
Well, hopefully you get to snap an arm off and take it home with you. Just put it on the wall as a reminder.
Yeah.
Do you notice difference in going back to, you know, what we were saying about you know, how when it first started out, a lot of the people were like fighters and mm-hmm. doing mm-hmm. jiu-jitsu, and now it's different. Do you notice differences in execution, in aggression, in mindset, in general between the different nations? So if you go up against Brazilians, do you notice mm-hmm. a different style versus mm-hmm. the, I don't know, Japanese or the Australians mm. and stuff like that? And what kind of differences do you normally notice?
Yeah, well, I would say, you know, it's hard to generalize, but, like, you know, I feel like Brazilians are a little bit more aggressive, like in a general sense, and they I would say, like, more of a training style, maybe less competition wise. I think competition wise, like, they're all pretty similar, they're all very competitive. But I think, like, training style-wise, like maybe training, like, in a gym or something, like, I would say, like, you know, the Brazilians, they're a bit more old school. You know, of course, this is not, like, across the board, but then, like, as a whole, because I've actually, like, trained in Brazil for a little bit. Yeah, but they're, like, you know, they're a little bit, like, they stick to the roots of jiu-jitsu. So, like, they're less likely to, like, expand, like, you know, they're less accepting of, like, new ideas and stuff. This is, of course, not true across the board, but, like, as a general sense, I would say, like, that's what it is. And then...
Yeah, more traditional.
More traditional, yeah, more traditional. They're, like, less likely to, like, explore something new. And then, but then for the Americans, I would say, like, a lot of, like, the jiu-jitsu in America, which is actually the hub of jiu-jitsu now, is in America, no longer in Brazil. Like, a lot of the Americans, they're willing to... try something new, you know, they're willing to innovate, they're always searching for the best way to do something, you know, and then they're more technical, they, you know, they play the game to win, you know, they play the game of jiu-jitsu rather than, like, fight jiu-jitsu. You know, I would say, like, Brazilians, they like to fight jiu-jitsu, and then, like, you know, like, Americans or, like, the Europeans, because it came to them as a sport, right? So they see it as a sport of jiu-jitsu, whereas maybe, like, you know, growing up in Brazil, they see jiu-jitsu as, like, oh, self-defense kind of thing. So they always have that mindset. I think that's kind of...
Yeah, that's kind of stuck, yeah.
Yeah.
You got guys like, you know, you're talking about it's kind of aggressiveness and stuff amongst the Brazilians. The person who immediately comes to my mind is Paul Harris.
Paul Harris, yeah.
Cosimar Paul Harris, yeah.
Freak of nature, yeah. Ripping people's
feet. He just wants a leg.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy. Does he still compete?
I think so. Yeah, I think he's more like a crowd favorite kind of thing. Like, he's a freak draw. You know, he's like, beast, kind of a man. Brock Lesnar kind of guy. Like, when he's, like, on the card, when he's competing, people want to watch because you never know what you're gonna get. Yeah. Like it's gonna be.
And he's just always, like, stone face. There's something different about him. I think he had a very bad childhood, apparently.
Oh, did he?
And that just was, like, obviously affected him, because he got kicked out of the UFC.
He did.
For the same reasons. He would just keep holding on to heel hooks and stuff like that.
I can't remember who it was. Like, I think it was in Bellator or something, like, against, like, Jake Shields. I think he held him with a Kimura for too long. I can't remember. This was a while ago. And then, something like that. Yeah, it's just a little bit like crazy. Yeah,
he's a beast, man. Like, who's your favorite at the moment? Do you have a favorite? Do you have or like a couple of favorites that you really like?
Like
their style, like fighter? What they do and stuff like that. Yeah.
Yeah. So, there's this guy called, like, Rafa Mendes. He's one of the best jiu-jitsu fighters of all time. Yeah, man. Like, he's like a martial artist. He's an artist. Like, the way he moves is just, like, insane. Like, he has since retired. Like, I think he retired, like, 2016 or something. But then, like, you know, there's videos online of, like, you know, world-class, like, black belts visiting his gym. And because like he has an online program, he like films everything, he uploads everything online. And he would just like play with them like a cat with a mouse. He would just like step around them, you know. Yeah, he's like, you know, him and like a few others have like really helped you to evolve into like a game. Yeah, and then like he has really like made everything like a bit more, made Jiu-Jitsu a lot more efficient. You know, I think he was one of the people who like spearheaded that. And of course, like, you know, one of my favorite people to watch is like, you know, my friend Levi. Like now he's one of the best in the world. He's a, you know, close training partner of mine. We used to train together 6-7 hours a day. Yeah, and then, yeah, I pretty much watch him like every step of the way. And I'm really happy to see where he is now. So yeah, he's one of the best and also one of my favorites.
That would have been so cool, you know, just seeing him from like you said, 16 years old, you know, just and you know, complete beginner and just going to where he is now and the things the world, that he's done. That's freaking crazy, man. What's the future hold for you in regards to what comps do you want to do? You know, do you have any dream competitions like maybe the ADCC in Abu Dhabi? That you want to go to? What other goals do you have for the future?
Yeah, man. Like, I think competitions this year are a little bit of a write off, but man, I would like to do a competition next year. So, I'm 31 now. I'll be 31 this year. So there is a competition called the World's Masters in America, in Las Vegas. So that's only for people over 30. So, you know, you fight people like similar to your age. You know, there was actually once I fought against a like young like MMA fighter who was like 18 and he was like Energizer Rabbit. But anyway, yeah, like it was hard to keep up with him. But yeah, so like I would like to do that. Like, you know, I would like to go to Vegas. I haven't been to Vegas in like 15 years. Yeah, so if everything goes well, you know, maybe next year, hopefully that will be my goal. But then coaching wise, I would say like I just keep doing what I do, you know, like I'm enjoying what I'm doing. You know, I'm enjoying really enjoying like coaching, you know, helping people like achieve what they like to achieve. Yeah, right now I'm living the dream. Can't complain.
Absolutely, man. Yeah, 100%. What's the oldest guy you've seen or girl go, like the biggest age difference, you know? Like, so the oldest, like, you know, have you ever seen like a 40 or a 50 year old just kick a 20 year old's ass?
Oh yeah. There was this, there's this black belt girl in the gym. She is 50 something. I can't remember. Yeah. She's 50 something. But then like when I first joined up in like 2013, I think she was like 45 or something. And then, well, number one, she kept in really good shape. She didn't look like she was 45 at the time. She looked like she was like mid 30s. And then she would come in and she would just like destroy like all of us. And then when she told us she was like 45, she was like, "Whoa, that's crazy." Yeah. And she's a really, really good friend of mine. Yeah. Her name is Jean.
She's Brazilian? And
then, no, she's Australian actually. Yeah, she's Australian. But yeah,
do you, really good like, friend of mine, yeah. What about, you know, what would you say to somebody who's, say, you know, in his late 20s or like mid 30s and, you know, just wants to get into jiu-jitsu but feels like, it's too late for me. Like, I'll never get my black belt. I'll never be that good. I'm a bit old now. My body won't recover. I'm going up against young people and stuff like that. What do you have to say to people like that? Because there's plenty of them out there.
It is, yeah. Well, I got to say, like, if you want to try something new, Jiu-Jitsu is a sport, man. Because, like, you know, if you do the techniques well enough, like, you know, if you do the technique the right way, like, you know, strength, athleticism, you know, that all doesn't matter. Because technique is king, you know. With proper technique, you know, and understanding of, like, your own body type, you're going to be the best version of yourself that you can be. And then,
sorry to cut you off. I think that's really interesting and important. You said understanding your own body type. Can you explain to everybody what you mean by that?
Yeah. So in jiu-jitsu, there's like there's many different moves. You know, you can watch a video online and they tell you to do a thing a certain way. But I think one of the most important aspects is to like find what works for you. You know, once you've done a little bit of jiu-jitsu, you know, you've done about 2-3 years, you're starting to having an understanding of like, oh, what techniques are. And then eventually you start to understand, you start to learn, like your body will start to learn what techniques suit your body type the most, you know. And then the good thing about jiu-jitsu is like whatever, you know, physical aspects that each person has, there's always a technique or set of techniques that work for you better than it will work for someone else. So let's say, like, you know, someone has really long arms or really long legs, someone's really tall and lanky, like a certain set of techniques that work really well for them. But someone who's like a little bit stockier, a little bit stronger, you know, there's like certain set of techniques that suit them as well. You know, there's no like single body type that's like the ideal body type in jiu-jitsu. You know, it might be a little bit different from, let's say, like swimming or like, let's say, like running, athletics. You know, there's like a certain like golden, you know, golden ratio for them. You know, like, you know, it's good to have like big feet or like really broad shoulders in swimming, or like, you know, different aspects for, like, you know, basketball players, they'd be really tall, like, in general. But there's not such a thing in jiu-jitsu, because like if you see throughout the history of jiu-jitsu, you know, champions, they come in all different sizes. You know, some are tall, some are short, you know, some are stocky, some are strong, you know, some take steroids, some don't. But, you know, yeah. So I think understanding like what kind of techniques work well for your body type will like really help you to excel in jiu-jitsu. Yeah, I think that's a really, really important part.
Absolutely, man. I think that's the beauty of a sport like that, you know, like, because like you said, like for sprinting, for example, for swimming, you need to be built a certain way to get to a world champion status, or level, just a world level, not even champion. But with jiu-jitsu, it's not the case. You know, you got you got fat people, you got skinny people, you got tall people, you got short people, but they've all managed to figure out what works for them. Because there's just so many avenues and ways you can do things.
It is, and just to touch on one more thing, I've even seen people with, like, you know, people missing a leg or people missing both legs, you know, doing jiu-jitsu, you know, like, we can't even, like, well, I can't speak for like their coach, but like for me, if I have a student like that, like, it would be hard for me to like imagine what it would be like for them. So like I can only teach them like what I know, and it's up to them to find what works for them. And then it's amazing. I've seen, like, there was once I rolled with a paraplegic. He was on crutches. You know, he had an accident or something. And then he was a purple belt. And then like I was a visitor to the gym. I was like, you know, having a nice roll with him. And then he just caught me in this thing, which like I didn't expect out of anywhere. I was like, whoa, what's going on? You know, he just, you know, people like that, they just find a way to make things work for them.
It's crazy,
you know, because like once you reach like a certain level in jiu-jitsu, you just find like things that work for you.
It's just sports like that. I think everybody should at some point get involved in combat sports, because it really teaches you about yourself. It really helps you develop yourself, your mind. It's, I don't know, something about it. And especially competition, you know, competing in any sport is good. Competing in anything is good. But certainly competing in combat sports against another human being is something else. And the feeling that you get to know that you can do it and survive it, and even, you know, if you dominate the other person, even better, right? That feeling is amazing. But to just know that you can go into a scrap time after time and survive and be fine, and that feeling that you get afterwards is it's an amazing feeling. So I think everybody should give it a crack at least once in their life. All right, to finish off with, any productivity tips, any books, any kind of anything along that the roads of being more successful or getting more out of the day that you figured out recently that you would like to share with us?
I wouldn't say recently. We've touched a little bit about this before, but I also read a lot of Stoicism. So, the number one book I would recommend for everyone, like, who's listening to this, is Meditations by Marcus Aurelius. You know, I've read that book like 3 or 4 times over. And then every time I read it, like, I would find find gems, you know. It's like little things that like apply to every part of your life, I think. Yeah, it's just things like that. Yeah. And then for productivity, I would say consistency, like try to be consistent, you know. It's just like baby steps. You know, you don't look at the end goal, but you look at like how you get. Oh, of course, you have to have an end goal, but I think like understanding like how you can do just a little bit more every day to get to your end goal. I think like, and then building upon of that. You know, you don't want to like take a leap and then like fall. You know, you just want to take like baby steps. Eventually, you know, you start to run, and then of course, end of the day, you want to reach your goal. I think that's how you know, try to reach whatever you want to achieve.
That's perfect. I 100% agree with that. As simple as that advice is, very few people follow it, and it's super important and super effective.
Yeah.
Where can people find you, Winston? Find you? Where can they find Garage Jiu-Jitsu? And if they want to come down and get choked out by you, where can they? When can they do that?
Yeah, man, I'm in Garage Jiu-Jitsu every day, so I'm there full time now. So we are in Bondi Junction. Just give us a search on Instagram or on Google. You'll find us. We are right beside the train station. I'm on Instagram. My Instagram will be it's Winston H BJJ. So you just search me, like look for the guy in the gi, and that's me. Yep.
Beautiful. And, thanks a lot for your time, Winston.
No worries. And one last thing.
Yeah, of course.
So,
go for it.
Yeah, so a friend of mine, she really, really wanted me to give a shout out to her. Her name is Nina Price. She's a trainer that works with me. She wants me to say that she has really nice biceps. That's all she wants me to say. Right? She wants everyone to know she has nice biceps. Okay. That's
Lena, right? The one that comes here for physio. Yeah, right.
Yes.
Okay. That's awesome. Good stuff. All right, cool. Well, I'll be seeing Lena soon, and I'll be giving closer inspections on those biceps myself and be the judge of that. Thanks a lot, Winston, man.
Right,
appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no problem at all. Thank you. Have a good one.
See you around.